Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
It was late at night, around 2 in the morning, and I was heading alone to the airport to pick up my grandmother. The road I took was not very busy, especially at that hour. The rain began to fall heavily, accompanied by thunder, making the whole environment even more desolate. After driving for a while, I came to a road through a dense forest. This was the only route to the main highway leading to the airport. It had always been rumored that this road was haunted, but I didn't believe in such things. To distract myself, I put on my favorite song, Englishman in New York by Sting, and tried to ignore the stories about the forest. I had been driving through the woods for about an hour when the road started to get bumpier and bumpier. It seemed almost impassable. That's when, without warning, my tire blew out. The sound was so loud that my heart skipped a beat. I had to stop immediately, and to make matters worse, I was in the middle of the forest, far from any civilization. I got out of the car in the rain to see the damage. The tire was completely shredded and, of course, I didn't have a spare. I tried to call a tow truck, but they told me it would take at least 3 hours to arrive. There wasn't much else I could do, so I went back to the car and waited for them to arrive. While waiting, I tried to distract myself by watching TikTok. Among the videos I watched, one caught my attention. It was a story about a strange creature that had been sighted in my state. It was said to be huge, with yellow eyes and razor-sharp teeth. I let out a nervous laugh, thinking it was just absurd rumors to scare people. But something inside me began to get restless. When the rain subsided, I got out of the car to check the tire again, hoping that maybe there was some way to fix it temporarily. What I saw, however, was worse than I imagined. Something or someone had scratched the bodywork, leaving deep, long marks on the metal. The air around me seemed heavier and denser. That's when I heard it. A scream that belonged to no human being. It was loud and high-pitched, and it came from somewhere near in the forest. I tried to run back to the car, but the door had slammed shut. As I frantically searched my pockets for my keys, I heard footsteps behind me. They were not normal footsteps. They were heavy, as if something massive was slowly approaching. When I dared to look, my body froze in place. A few feet away from me, in the shadows of the trees, stood a gigantic creature, over 8 feet tall, covered in dark brown fur. Its eyes glowed bright yellow, and it had a mouth full of razor-sharp teeth. The most terrifying was a single horn protruding from its forehead, curved backward like a spear. Fear paralyzed me, but I managed to pull out the bear spray I always carried with me for emergencies. I sprayed it in the face, but the creature barely blinked. No harm was done. In desperation, I smashed the car window to take shelter inside. The beast began to walk slowly toward me, its claws echoing against the ground. It approached the car and began to look through the windows, studying me as if it knew I had no escape. Time passed slowly as the creature prowled around my car, stalking me like a predator. My breathing was heavy, and every second felt like an eternity. Just when I thought all was lost, I saw the lights of the tow truck approaching down the road. The noise of the crane's engine caused the creature to raise its head as if it heard something disturbing. Without warning, it ran into the forest with surprising speed, disappearing into the darkness. The tow truck driver saw nothing unusual, but I was too frightened to explain what had happened. I could hardly speak. I simply climbed into the tow truck and let the driver take my car to a nearby garage. After my car was repaired, I drove as fast as I could to the airport. When I finally arrived and saw my grandmother, I tried to explain to her what had happened. I told her about the creature and how it had stalked me in the middle of the woods. Her reaction was alarming. Instead of dismissing it as a hallucination, her face filled with concern. She made me sit up and, with a sigh, told me a story I had never heard before. The creature I had seen had a name, Garajarama. According to an ancient Persian legend, Garajarama was a monster that hunted and devoured children lost in the forest. He would only stop when the victim was past the age of adolescence or when he saw something he considered sacred. My grandmother thought that maybe the fact that I had just turned 20 had saved my life. From that day on, my life changed. I could no longer make fun of the paranormal as I had before. What I experienced that night was too real to be a simple hallucination. Now, every time I pass near a forest, I remember Garajarama's yellow eyes lurking in the shadows, waiting for his next victim.
That night was going to be a simple party among friends. We had planned everything for weeks: a big house, beer, music, and Halloween. We were a group of about 30 people, all acquaintances of acquaintances, but at least we knew each other's faces. I remember being with my friends, having a beer, when I noticed a face I didn't recognize. It was a tall man with a tense face and eyes a little wider than usual. He didn't seem to belong to the group. I didn't recognize him from any other party or circle of friends. I thought he was just one more of those sneaks that always show up when someone spreads the word. Or maybe he was the new boyfriend of one of the girls. I remember when I saw him, he was in a corner, talking, but alone. He was moving his lips as if he had someone in front of him, and worse, he seemed to be arguing. That's when something unexpected happened. The man stopped moving erratically and looked directly at me as if he knew I was watching him. He smiled strangely as if greeting me. I felt exposed as if he had caught me doing something I shouldn't have. At that instant, I realized that he was approaching me, slowly but without taking his eyes off me. I was about to approach my friends to warn them about this man, but suddenly he stopped, no more than 10 feet away from me, watching me as if he were waiting for something. I turned to my friends, but by the time I looked back, the guy was gone. He had disappeared into the crowd without a trace. I told my friends everything, and they thought I was drunk. The ones who were drunk were them. Anyway, some of them believed me, and we started looking for the man at the party, but we didn't find anyone. Maybe he had left. It was probably someone who had snuck in. After that, we all calmed down and went back to the party. One of my friends, Sophie, had gone up to the second floor to get her purse. It wouldn't take more than a couple of minutes. It was 10. Then 15. I tried not to worry, but I approached the others and asked if they had seen her come back. No one knew anything. I didn't want to sound paranoid, so I went upstairs to look for her. After climbing the stairs, I came to the room where Sophie had gone to get her purse. The door was ajar. I walked in and saw her. Sophie was lying on the bed, sleeping. "Sophie, wake up!" She didn't answer. I moved a little closer, and just as I was about to touch her shoulder, the bedroom door slammed shut behind me. I jumped in fright, turning to see who had done it. And there he was, the guy I'd seen downstairs. The guy was leaning against the door, breathing raggedly. In his hand, he held a handkerchief and a bottle. You didn't have to be very smart to figure out what that was. That was chloroform. "Don't come any closer!"
"Do it! Do it!"
"No, leave her alone. You did what you had to do. These people have nothing to do with it." Didn't you see how she was looking at you? Now she's unprotected. It's the best chance you'll ever have.
Don't come any closer! At first, I thought he was talking to me, but I quickly realized he wasn't. He was talking as if there was someone else in the room, but it was just him, Sophie, and me. His tone of voice, it changed. First, as if he was arguing, and then as if he was imitating another voice, deeper, more inhuman. What could I do in such a situation? If I screamed, maybe I could alert someone, but if I provoked him, maybe I would end up like Sophie. This man seemed much bigger than me. He looked dangerous. I shouldn't provoke him. Hey, you don't have to do this. We can get out of here and pretend that nothing happened. Then, out of nowhere, the man dropped the handkerchief and began to cry. Deep, painful sobs, as if he had suddenly become aware of something. My family. I killed my family. I killed them all. I can't control it. I can't. He makes me do it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't understand anything he was telling me, and to be honest, I didn't care to do it. I just thought this was my chance to escape. The man was still crying. I slowly approached the door, keeping my hands visible. I am going to get help, okay? Don't worry, everything will be fine. As my hand touched the doorknob, the sound of his crying changed. It was no longer a cry. It was a laugh. A maniacal laugh, full of emotion. He was laughing out loud as if he had been told the best joke of his life. I slowly turned around and saw him standing there, looking at me with a crazy expression in his eyes. At that exact moment, I ran like I had never run before in my life, running down the stairs two at a time. I reached the living room and started screaming. Some people looked at me confused. He appeared behind me, throwing himself on top of me, making me fall to the floor. I felt his hands on my body. In a second, out of nowhere, the man lifted my head and slammed it on the ground. Then he lifted my head again, but before he could do it again, a group of guys yanked him away. But the guy didn't budge. He pulled a knife out of his pocket and showed it to everyone. Panic broke out at the party. The music stopped and people started running in all directions. No one wanted to confront the crazy guy with the knife. The guy was still laughing, waving the knife as he backed toward the door. Then he ran away. No one followed him. As much as many kids wanted to play hero, they all knew that if they chased that man, maybe some of them wouldn't come back. I lay on the ground, shaking, trying to process what had just happened. My friends surrounded me in concern. I told them to go get Sophie, who was still asleep. The next day, the news broke about what had happened that night. The man who broke into the party, whose name was William Liskey, had murdered his own family before showing up at our party, just as he told me. Before he came to the party, he killed his father, stepmother, and brother in his own home in a brutal manner. Liskey was completely out of control when he was arrested, laughing like a maniac, some witnesses said. He offered no resistance when he was arrested, but he wouldn't stop talking to himself, just as he did at the party. I can't stop thinking how easily he could have been one of the victims. If it wasn't me, it could have been Sophie. After his arrest, the trial was swift. Liskey was convicted of the murders of his family and sentenced to life in prison. He pleaded guilty without remorse, and the only thing he mentioned was that the voices told him to do it. The same voices he heard that night. Voices that were not satisfied with the man killing his family. He wanted my blood and my friend's blood, too. And you know, what saved me was luck. Luck that he got confused at that exact moment and stopped his attack. If that had not happened, today we would be two more of his victims. This story is based on the crime of William B.J. Liskey, who committed a brutal triple murder on Halloween in 2010. Liskey, a troubled young man with a history of violent behavior, killed his father, William Liskey Sr., his stepmother, Susan Liskey, and his stepbrother, Derek Griffin, in their home in Martin, Ohio. The murders were discovered on Halloween morning when a relative arrived at the house for a planned gathering and found the gruesome scene. The victims had been attacked with a combination of blunt force trauma and gunshots, leaving the family and the community in shock. After committing the murders, Liskey calmly left the house and attended a Halloween party with friends, showing no signs of remorse or distress.
He later confessed that he had been hearing voices in his head, which told him to carry out the killings. Liske had long struggled with severe mental health issues, and these auditory hallucinations played a significant role in his violent actions.
I was never a big fan of fishing. I wasn't afraid of the water or anything, I just found it boring. But my brother Tom had gotten a small electric boat and proposed to me to go out to sea to fish quietly, so I accepted. The idea seemed perfect. We both enjoyed the peace of being in the middle of the ocean with no one to bother us. Just us, the water, and the tranquility. We woke up early that day. The sky was clear and the sea looked like a mirror, completely calm. The boat Tom had bought was not much, just a small electric boat, but it was enough for two people. At first, I thought it was odd that he wanted to go so far from the harbor, but Tom insisted that the farther we went, the more big fish we could catch. I didn't argue. I knew Tom liked fishing, and I knew absolutely nothing about the sea, so why not leave it all to him? We set sail without any problems. We could see the city getting smaller and smaller as we went out to sea. It was a liberating feeling. Maybe I had exaggerated a little with the water, or maybe my brother was right after all. When we reached the point Tom had marked on his GPS, he turned off the engine. All was calm. We armed our fishing rods and prepared for a quiet day. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. After an hour of fishing, Tom pulled out his drone. He had been talking about it all the way. He had recently bought it and wanted to try it out in the middle of the ocean. He turned the drone on and launched it into the air, flying over the water like just another toy. From the boat, everything was still normal. We were quiet, enjoying the day, but then I noticed something strange. Tom, who was controlling the drone from his phone, suddenly frowned. I saw him focusing on the screen more intently as if he had seen something strange. At first, I didn't think anything of it. I thought it might be a larger fish or perhaps some curious animal coming to the surface, but the expression on his face quickly changed from curiosity to a kind of panic I'd never seen on him before.
"Matt, I think there's something underneath us."
"I guess so. Basically, that's why we're here, isn't it?"
"I'm serious, Matt. I think there's something really dangerous underneath us."
I didn't understand what he was saying. I got up and walked over to him, looking over his shoulder. On the drone screen, there was a dark spot moving under the water, slowly approaching our boat. At first, I thought it was a whale or some kind of manta ray, but as the thing got closer, I realized it was no friendly animal. It was a shark. A huge shark. "Tom, start the engine!" I had never seen a shark before. My heart was beating fast, but I didn't want to panic. However, the approaching thing was too big to ignore. Tom tried to start the engine, but at that moment, the boat began to shake. The shark rammed the boat hard. It was as if a wall of steel had slammed into us. I fell to the ground, hitting my elbow against the structure of the boat. The sound of the impact was deafening, as if the whole ocean had rolled over us. I got up as best I could, looking around for the shark. I saw it pass under the boat. There was a feeling of horrifying despair. This animal was truly terrifying. "Throw the bait!" I obeyed. I took out the bucket of bait we had for fishing and emptied it into the water. But it didn't work. The shark wasn't interested in that. It was interested in us. It rammed the boat again, this time with more force. The impact almost threw us into the water. The boat began to creak, and for a moment, I thought it would break in two. I looked at Tom. He was pale, his hands shaking on the boat's steering wheel. He was pushing the buttons, trying to start the engine, but it wouldn't respond. We knew we were in trouble. Big trouble. The last lunge was the worst. The boat tipped dangerously to one side, and Tom lost his balance. He fell into the water, hanging onto the railing, half his body submerged. "Tom!" I ran towards him. His hands were slipping, and the force of the water was pushing him down. The shark, which until that moment had been moving slowly around the boat, changed its direction. It was heading straight for Tom. I saw its fin moving underwater, speeding up. With all my strength, I grabbed Tom by the arms and pulled him into the boat. I felt his weight in the water splashing everywhere. The shark was getting closer and closer. Time seemed to stand still.
I could feel Tom's heavy breath as he struggled to get out of the water. And just when I thought he wouldn't make it, I managed to pull him out in time. The shark passed right by where he had been seconds before, grazing the hull of the boat. Tom gasped, his hand still shaking. We looked at each other, not knowing what to do. The boat was damaged and the engine was barely responsive. Still, Tom tried again and miraculously the engine roared once more. But the boat was not accelerating as before. It was barely going, fading on and off while the shark continued to lurk. The shark would not go away. Every time the engine failed, we saw it approaching, that fin breaking the water. We were completely focused on trying to escape, but there wasn't much we could do with the damaged engine. Then, on the horizon, I saw something that gave us a little hope. Another boat. It was close. Close enough to try to call for help. It looked like a boat similar to ours, with a person in it. We started heading towards them, although the engine was not giving us the speed we needed. The shark was still behind us, getting closer and closer. As we were about to reach the other boat, the shark charged again. This time, it was brutal. I felt the whole boat lift out of the water and then fall with a thud. The impact caused the boat to capsize. My world was turned upside down. I saw Tom clinging to the capsized boat, but I fell into the water. I sank for a few seconds, but managed to surface. The capsized boat was close, but I couldn't reach it. I looked around desperately, searching for the shark. I knew I didn't have much time before it came for me. Then, from the other boat, the man threw us a rope. I grabbed it with all my strength, and he began to pull me into his boat. My arms hurt, but I kept swimming. The shark was close. I made the mistake of turning around and saw him swimming quickly to where I was. I used all my strength for nothing. It was gaining on me. It was going to devour me. In a last-ditch effort, the other man pulled on the rope to give me an extra push, and with all the strength I didn't know I had, I climbed into the boat with the man's help. The man helped me to my feet, and just as the shark changed direction toward Tom, we yelled for him to jump. With the little time I had, Tom jumped into our boat. He miscalculated and fell into the water, but this time, the shark was far away and we both helped him. The boat accelerated at full speed, pulling us away from the shark. My brother and I looked back and watched it disappear. We were in shock, soaking wet, shivering. When we got to the harbor, people looked at us as if we had seen a ghost. We told them what happened, and they were as terrified as we were. There were no reports of sharks in that area. My brother knew this, the people in the harbor knew this, but somehow the shark had gotten there and almost killed us. From that day on, Tom and I never went back out to sea. We never went near a boat, nor did we ever plan to.
My name is Austin Mitchell, and I'm an addict. Now, I know what you're probably thinking after hearing that. As I'm sure, images of the most common vices, for example, drugs and alcohol, just ran through your mind. But how I wish my addiction was that simple, as I'm an addict to something far worse than any other vices you may think of. There really isn't a word for this condition, as some doctors and psychologists, that I am an extreme adrenaline junkie. But I know it isn't an adrenaline rush that I'm looking for. What I'm really addicted to is seeing death. Now, I know this must be very strange to hear, but after hearing my story, you'll understand the reason behind my strange addiction. I've been dealing with death ever since I was a little kid. When I was 10, I remember pulling dangerous stunts like pole walking on the high jungle gym during recess. I did this just to see how far I could get before I fell. My strange antics just went up a notch from there, as when I was 12, I decided to jump out of my bedroom window just for the fun of it. These bizarre activities led me to break a lot of bones, and I was rushed to the ICU more than once. My parents and siblings all thought I was insane, as they all believed something was truly wrong with my head. But I didn't blame them, as I knew they couldn't see what I was seeing. As I grew older, I craved that dangerous feeling even more, as I started to do things that were even crazier. My friends at the time called me the ultimate daredevil, and it didn't take long before they saw my strange antics as a way to make a profit, because they eventually started filming them and uploading the videos online. These videos gained traction almost immediately, and it didn't take long before they all went viral. Most nights, I would read the comments under these videos, and I would see people saying things like, I can't believe this guy is crazy enough to constantly put his life at stake just for our own amusement and to get a couple of views. I always chuckled at comments like these because I knew deep down that I didn't care about the views. I truly did all these dangerous acts for my own thrill. It happened on the 16th of July, 2010. To increase the stakes, I decided to do something I had never done before, as I made arrangements to swim with sharks. This was probably the most dangerous thing I had ever done, and I wasn't sure if I was going to survive or not. My friends tried to talk me out of it, as they said it was far too dangerous. But I told them that they shouldn't be worried, as my goal wasn't to die, but to get so close to death that I could see her. They still tried to talk me out of it, but I had my mind made up, and no one was going to change it. We made our way to New Smyrna Beach in Florida, a place that was notoriously known as the shark capital of the world. Numerous safety precautions were made, as there was a safety boat nearby, in case anything too deadly happened. The cameras were then set up, and we began to wait. I still remember standing in the water with a huge smile on my face, as the thrill I felt was amazing. An hour had quickly gone by, and nothing had happened yet. I thoroughly enjoyed the suspense, as I knew something dangerous was going to happen at any minute now. But the hours kept passing us by, and nothing exciting had still happened. I could see the tension on the faces of my friends and the safety crew as they were all expectantly waiting for something to happen. But as the day went by, the tension turned into fatigue and it started to seem like no sharks were going to show up. It didn't take long before they told me that I should give up and try again tomorrow. But I didn't want to leave and I was determined to see this through to the very end. I already knew it wasn't going to happen quickly as I had done a lot of research on sharks. I knew these animals weren't ones to go out of their way to attack people, as the ISAF, International Shark Attack File, reported that it was more likely to be struck by lightning than be attacked by a shark. I knew the odds weren't in my favor, but I also knew that these animals had a crazy attraction to blood. So, to speed things up, I asked for a pocket knife. They gave me the knife, and I proceeded to give myself a little cut on the leg while standing in the water. I told myself that this was bound to attract at least one of them, and I braced myself for it, but nothing happened. It was getting pretty late now, and I had been in the water for too long. The safety team kept trying to convince me to take a break before I continued, but I didn't agree. They could tell my mind was set on this, so they decided to go back to shore and get something to eat. As the safety boat pulled away, I started to get a change of heart. My skin was completely wrinkled now, and I was also pretty hungry. I was finally about to give up when it happened. I instantly felt like my leg was in a shredder as I was fighting to drag underwater. I thrashed and struggled against it, but it was too strong. The safety team, who had noticed this, immediately started to make their way back to me, but they were too far to reach me in time. The pain was unbearable, and I started to scream, but it didn't take long before I stopped screaming as I found myself smiling. This was it. This was all I craved for, all I ever wanted. It was perfect. I stopped struggling now, and I was about to give in, when two strong arms pulled me out of the water. Spear guns were used to repel the shark, and they quickly rushed me to the hospital. Luckily, the shark wasn't able to take my entire leg off, but I was left with 48 stitches for the 24 cuts I had received. This incident shook my friends as we were told that I was lucky to be alive. After that, they all decided to stop the videos and the extreme daredevil stunts, as they realized that I could have actually died that day. But all I could really think about was the next life-threatening situation I was going to put myself in. I was always prepared to die, as I knew it was bound to happen sooner rather than later. I also knew that, even if they stopped filming me, I would continue doing my dangerous stunts to keep chasing that thrill. This was the only way I could come face-to-face with death, and I know I'll give anything to see her beautiful pale face once again.